welcome to the Yanks Are Coming Soccer Show. Tonight, Karnick and I are going to talk about the qualifiers that just happened. U.S. gets 4 points from two games. Just dive right in, Karnick, your initial assessment of what you saw in San Jose and then against Panama.
I thought it was fantastic, the game against Honduras in San Jose. Great atmosphere. First really, really good atmosphere we've seen on the West Coast for a U.S. qualifier in a long time. So that's an important a factor, although I think fans travel from everywhere. It's not necessarily who hosts the game. There was a lot of energy in that stadium with Bruce Arena returning to the national team helm for a qualifier, and he got his tactics right, an attacking formation. Clint Dempsey proved to be the right combination player to work with Christian Pulisic, who was brilliant in the match. Josie Altidore had a very strong match, kind of serving as a foil for Dempsey and doing some little things well. I thought Darlington Nagbe was very good, and Sebastian Leggett was fairly good before getting injured, unfortunate injury. And the back line held up fairly well. There were some question marks about Villafana coming into the match, playing left back, and the injury situation dictated Arena selection, which, of course, when we get to Panama, it's going to be an even bigger talking point is the injuries. Arena made the decision not to call Timmy Chandler in because of his yellow card suspension, which may have been a decision he regretted when we got down to Panama. So I thought Honduras' match was great, that Dempsey marked his return well. Christian Pulisic showed that he's a world-class talent, and that the consistency and continuity between Dempsey and Pulisic, the way they read each other's movements, the way they play with each other, is really something special to watch. And at this point, you have to say that when you play with better players, it elevates your game. We know that. Pulisic has been playing with Aubameyang and Royce and Götze and these really top level attacking players at Dortmund. And he has been able to anticipate Clint Dempsey, who's 15 years older than him, 15 years older than him, his movement, his type of game, the understanding that those two have developed is tremendous at this point, and I think Josie Altidore played his role in that. When we got to the Panama game, Neil, I think my biggest concern coming out of that game, I know the back line was a mess, and Arena had to go with this Gonzalez-Ream combination that did not work out plainly and was a step slow. And one of the things that I noted on Daniel Feuerstein's post-game show was that I felt like the Ream-Gonzalez combination gave us the type of sloppy clearances that we used to see from U.S. players in the 1990s from center backs. And we would see occasionally from Bocanegra and Onyewu. But we would never see it from Eddie Pope. We just generally have not seen it from John Brooks in a while. The kind of just desperate clearances of balls and returning possession to the other team and then putting your fullbacks, Villafana and Graham Zusi, who was not a fullback and was forced to play at right back in this game, in a bad position because they're pushing forward as you're supposed to be clearing the ball, and then suddenly you've returned possession and they're on the back foot and they're having to chase. So, for example, that happened on the goal. I don't blame Villafana. I blame the center backs for not clearing that ball properly. But my biggest concern, Neil, and I'd love to get your take out of this, is we just talked about how Pulisic and Dempsey are on the same page, the understanding they've developed. Darlington Nagbe is a very technical player who is playing at a very high pace at a very high level right now. I think Altidore is working well with those guys. I get the sense that Michael Bradley is a step slow in his reaction, a step slow in his thought process when he's on the ball, and is just now, and we talked about maybe an inability of Bradley to play well with Dempsey in the past, but now I'm seeing I don't think he plays particularly well with Pulisic or Nagbe, and I don't think he completed a single ball to Nagbe last night.
Yeah, I mean, look, Michael Bradley it was a weird two games for Michael, because Michael was very good Friday night. I don't think that, you know, I think that last night, in a game where the U.S. really needed Michael to put his foot on the ball a bit and kind of dictate the tempo a little bit, Michael didn't do that. Now, I'm inclined to sort of deflect a little bit of your question and say how much of that is about, you know, the fact that Bruce Arena apparently isn't a miracle worker and can't make Michael Bradley and Jermaine Jones an effective central pairing. And how much of that is actually about Michael Bradley? Because I think that there's a relatively large contingent now that says, well, the U.S. needs to move beyond its captain, and they need to start an altogether new central midfield pairing. I'm just not as persuaded by that argument, I guess, as so much as I'm persuaded by the argument that the U.S. probably needs to move, not even probably, the U.S. has to do something different than Michael Bradley and Jermaine Jones collectively. And if they can't win a game like the one last night, which I thought was there for the taking, really, then that's not a pairing that's going to work. It's certainly not a pairing that's going to win at Azteca for the first time in a qualifier. And I think, you know, I think there's something to that. Now, Michael played, in a testament to sort of how weird his game was last night, and he plays a beautiful ball to Bedoya down a flank in about the 70th minute after Bedoya had come on. And Beloy made a tremendous clearance on Bedoya's cross. But beyond that moment, there wasn't a lot of really bright moments for Michael. And I thought the other thing that is hurting the U.S. that they have to get sorted out, as it pertains to Michael directly, because that's what you asked me about, is set-piece service. You know, I thought when Michael first started taking the majority or lion's share of the U.S. set-pieces, it went okay. Obviously, we had an Olympico, and we've had some other bright moments, a ball to Jeff Cameron. Obviously, Graham Zusi delivered the ball to Brooks at the World Cup. But the point is that his service on those set pieces was decent, if not good. I thought the U.S. hurt themselves on set piece opportunities last night. Now, one of those was an inexcusable play by Omar Gonzalez after being warned twice by a referee. And you just can't do that. But the U.S. has to figure out answers there as well, because those, as you well know, are such vital moments at World Cups and against good teams. Like, if you can steal set-piece goals, you can win those games. And if you squander set-pieces, increases the likelihood that you don't win those games. So I think that the U.S. last night was sort of the definitive last blow, if we really needed one, that Bradley and Jones doesn't work. And I feel like Bruce Arena, having seen that now once in a live competitive game, has to know that he can't go that route again. So who then deputizes, I think, is the interesting question moving forward.
Yeah, I think that I agree with that, Neil. I think the Jones-Bradley combo doesn't work. It hasn't worked for a long time. I like keeping Jermaine Jones around the national team. I think he has a lot of fight. He has a lot of spunk. I thought he was probably – I was worried that he was going to get himself sent off yesterday because of the way he was I was anticipating him getting in a Panamanian player's face or the referee's face every time Christian Pulisic was getting hacked, which is another
play. It was great to see how they it was great to see how the veterans,
stood
responded
up to.
Yeah, that was right. Tremendous to see.
So I always want Jermaine Jones until he retires from professional soccer in my dressing room. I'll be perfectly honest with you, but I think the combo is not working. I know both of them tended to in that Mexico qualifier. You were there in Columbus, Neil. They the two of them were complaining to Jurgen Klinsmann about the tactics and were in Klinsmann's face before the end of the first half about the way that the two of them had been set up in that 3-5-2, and the change was made at that point. But I think as an effective combo, there's not enough mobility with those two, and I think the range of passing – Bradley has a great range of passing on his day, but when he's not on his game, you see lots of giveaways. You have two guys that are giving the ball away very, very frequently and are not on the same pace, both mentally and physically, as a Nagby, a Pulisic, and a Dempsey. So that's,
no, I agree.
So that's a major concern. Now, is it Perry Kitchen, who's having a very good season with Hearts? Is it Danny Williams, who's been a little bit hit or miss this season with Reading? But when he's been good, he's been good. But he's had some stinkers, too, for Reading. Is it him? Do you look at some other option there? Do you move Jeff Cameron into the midfield? That's still a possibility. I think that's something Rena needs to think about.
I think you have to go young and new, okay? And what I mean by that is you have to evaluate Emerson Heineman. You have to evaluate Kellen Acosta. This is the great thing. I've never been excited for – I really haven't been excited for a Gold Cup in many years. And I hate saying that because I know some people are, oh, it's international soccer. I'm going to get jazzed up about it. But it's hard. I mean,
yeah, right.
It's hard sometimes. Like it just and under Klinsmann, not only was it hard, but it was like an exercise in
and there's always
much...
a moment in that tournament that makes you, whether it's a U.S. game where you get outshot by Haiti and you have
that's what I was going to say.
Yeah,
right.
Mitch Diskerud is in James Marsalin's pocket, or if it's officiating, as we saw again last night in CONCACAF. I mean, Jovan Jones scores what I thought was a golazo. I know, Neil, you and I were both tweeting about it at the time. Great goal,
yeah,
with a lifted Trinidad. They're pushing to try and get into that fourth spot, and they get denied it by CONCACAF officiating. There's always a call like that in a Gold Cup because it's CONCACAF officials that makes you say, you know what, I really don't want to watch the rest of this tournament.
Yeah, I mean, I was surprised that Cesar Ramos, who is a very good referee, didn't have more control over the U.S. game last night.
He got called in at the last minute. I think that might have been part of the reason.
Yeah, I mean, I will say, had he been called in for, I mean, obviously he can't referee Trinidad and Mexico. And if it's his group, though, you know, in a world where that's allowed, I'm sure that that's onside.
Yeah.
But just, you know, really bad luck.
To Ramos' credit last night, and as I said, he got called in late as a replacement for this game. He did not, once he lost control of the match, he did not start producing cards, which I think always makes things worse. If
I agree,
a
lot of referees do that. Oh, well, I'll get control of it now.
Right.
You know, and then here comes yellow card after yellow card. In fact, that happened in the Trinidad and Tobago Mexico match.
Yeah.
I mean, he not only had he missed the call and had, you know, the crowd from I had multiple conversations during the match with a couple of my TTFA people and I mean, the crowd was bad. He needed a police escort out. So, you know, and it stinks for Trinidad and Tobago because 1 point or 2 points is the difference between a playoff and not.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you know, that's a shame because beyond just Jovan Jones, Levi Garcia, there are some nice young players on that team. And it would be interesting to see them at a World Cup.
And they had not played. I know, obviously, there was a Molino Hart dispute and Hart got sacked. They had not played as badly in the hex as people had thought they would. They obviously won the game against Panama. They were very good last night against Mexico. I think in their first two games when Stephen Hart was still managing them, they lost both of them, but they weren't as abject as the United States was. I mean, they didn't look as bad as the U.S. under Clinton.
No, and they played them without Molino because of the dispute,
which
was a disaster. You know, and then there was a discussion, and the new manager takes over and says he's not going to call in Molino, so he lasts about 15 days. really, they just switch managers to get Molino back? Whatever.
It must be a great relief for Molino to be on a side that only concedes one goal or so a game, because that's not the way it's been going for him in Major League Soccer with Minnesota, but I digress. Let me bring up the point of Christian Pulisic and the hacking we saw from Panama. I think this is going to be a strategy of CONCACAF opponents as we go forward. Pulisic is a once-in-a-lifetime talent from the United States. He's a once-in-a-generation talent, maybe, from CONCACAF. So we've seen some other great CONCACAF players come through and be subjected to this sort of cynical fouling, very kind of nasty physical game. We saw it with Honduras had a golden generation a few years ago, and we saw David Suazo before he broke down, constantly being fouled by other Central American teams so that he never got his mojo and got into a flow of a game. And I saw Panama employ that same strategy, Panama being one of the teams that had employed it against Honduras in those days, against Pulisic yesterday. Is this, you know, something we need to get used to as U.S. Fans?
It's going to happen. Some teams did it to Landon Donovan. It's a tweeted last night.
Yeah.
Mexico were too proud to do it. My thinking is that Mexico will be too proud to do it to Pulisic. What was interesting last night is that they did it to Darlington Nagby too. Nagby must have thought he was back in Portland as much as he was getting hacked. But
it had a very MLS feel to it. I mean, again, I don't want to. I don't want to take shots at MLS, and all the MLS apologists will just get very upset about that. But Panama, the core of that team has played in MLS almost the entire team.
Sure,
MLS,
I mean,
at
you
some
know,
point, and it had that feel to it.
I mean, and then there's a reason debate to be had that a guy like Alberto Quintero he should have gotten more opportunities in larger places. But you know, some of those guys, Machado, Armando Cooper, those are the Roman Torres probably should have gotten shots at other places too. But you know, I mean, yeah, they're very quality MLS players. I think I tweeted something about how I like Armando Cooper. I've always liked him. He's a nice role player.
And I think he ended up back in MLS because he was at St. Pauli, and after that Gold Cup, that tragic semifinal where they were – you talk about being robbed in the game. There's never been quite a robbery like that.
Oh,
in
incredible.
Atlanta, he took his time to get back to Germany and ended up being released. So that was of great benefit to Toronto and Major League Soccer. But I think he's actually a European-level player, Armando Cooper.
Sure. No, him and Quintero are certainly European-level players. And Quintero has been for years. We did not see Edgar Barquenas, who I think is another player that they have that is of a very high quality. But we're getting off the point, which was, yes, I think this will be a strategy pretty consistently against Pulisic. I think what's interesting and what will be interesting is when, and this is a discussion we can have. If people want to send us questions, you can find us on Twitter. You can email us. We'll get those out. But point being, ask us on Twitter. I mean, my position is still that Fabian Johnson is the best American soccer player at present. I have no idea how long he will retain that belt, the mythical belt. I'm going to be fascinated by whether or not the Hakapuli continues when Fabian is back. Just because if you're going to foul someone that way, you're going to take yourself out of position defensively. It's just logic.
Yeah.
And if they don't call those fouls, then it's going to open up gaps. All I thought about Friday night, to be quite honest, once it got to about 4-0, was A, how do you ever sit Clint Dempsey?
Right.
Until you just absolutely have to, because all he does is produce.
Right. I have to say, and I'll let you get to the next point in a minute.
Yeah, go for it.
This is a bit of a problem for Michael Bradley, because I think we're now looking at about 2 years, 2.5 years of Bradley and Dempsey not playing well together, with the exception of that game. And in fact, Bradley's best games with the national team in the late Klinsmann era were when Dempsey was missing, and including those two friendlies in Europe. When we beat Germany, we beat the Netherlands. And it's
right.
I think it's a pace thing. It's an understanding thing. They're not similarly styled players. Now, it went well for them in the 2010 and 2014 World Cups at times together, but these cracks were there before. But if Dempsey's going to continue to be in the team, you have to reevaluate where you play Michael. Maybe you play Michael very deep as the field.
It's a really astute point, Kardik, and I don't think it's one that's being made maybe as pronounced as it should be, because everybody like me falls into the Bradley Jones trap, and I think you're right about that. I think the B point for me was just, this is, could the U.S. have gone from a team that you wondered where the goals would come from when Clint Dempsey had his heart condition to a team that now you say, how dynamic can they be with Pulisic, with Johnson? And the cool thing about those two guys is that they're not even remotely similar players.
Right.
Fabian is a pure, he's really a pure winger. But he's wonderful on the in-cut in a little bit of a Gio Dos Santos way. Except I think he's better at accessing the channels than Gio, which is probably why he's so much better a club player, right?
Yeah, I actually compare him to Eric Lamela, who's now been injured for a while for Spurs, but very similar style player.
Sure. I mean, he's great. He's great. He's a gap burster. He's spectacular at holding runs. He can run vertically or diagonally. I don't know. And he's relatively tidy on the ball. I think he's kind of undervalued as a passer and maybe overvalued on the ball. But I don't know if that's entirely fair to him, you know, because when you play on the wing, it's different in possession than it is in the middle of the field. But it's incredible to have those sorts of options because on the one hand, you have someone who can finally now suck out defenders and get in between the lines. And then you have a guy who is masterful in maybe one of the two best leagues in the world, with all due respect to the top of La Liga, and exploiting spaces when there are gaps because someone is playing between the lines, right? So extraordinarily complementary pieces in Fabian and Pulisic, which is why when I see people wanting to play Fabian at left back, I think, boy, the U.S. left back situation must be really dire to turn down the type of complementary pieces that a Johnson Pulisic midfield presents.
And Bruce Arena has already said he's not going to do that. So he made it very clear in his very first comments about World Cup qualifying on national television was that he's watched Fabian at Mönchengladbach. He likes how he plays coming off the left side of midfield. That's where he's going to play for the U.S. You talk about great players for the United States in one of the two best leagues in the world. I have to throw this in there. I know he's not been good with the United States and has been scapegoated often and maybe he's seen as a symbol of the Jurgen Klinsmann era. But for me, this season in the Bundesliga, Timmy Chandler has been the best American player in that one of the two best leagues in the world. So how does Bruce Arena integrate him when he does, which I presume will be the next set of qualifiers?
Well, I hope he does. And I was kind of curt about Chandler last night, because his production record with the national team is not great. But sometimes just a change of manager makes a huge difference in those sorts of things. It's just a confidence.
And I also think this season at the club level, he's been a lot better than he was last season at the club level or the year before. So he just seems to be hitting his stride as a player. So maybe that doesn't translate to the international game, and he's a guy that after this summer we discard. I mean, it's possible, but I'm thinking based on how he's played in Germany this season with Eintracht, you have to give him a look, and you've got to give him a shot in a couple qualifiers.
The temptation, Kardik, is going to be to not bring these high-level European club players to the Gold Cup. I might bring a Timmy Chandler to the Gold Cup and say, look, I know you don't want to be here for 3 weeks. You know you don't want to be here for 3 weeks. But do you want to be – what do you want to be with the national team long-term? These are the sorts of difficult discussions that managers have all the time.
Yeah.
And maybe that's what you say. Because, I mean, his list of – especially on the road, his list of effective performances in non-friendlies is a good game against St. Vincent, which doesn't
right,
count.
Right.
I mean, that's it. The U.S. has to go to his own personal house of horrors, the San Pedro Sula, in the fall. They have to go to Azteca, which I think is one of the five most difficult places to play in international soccer.
Yeah.
So there's two, I think, kind of brutal road trips left, and then there's Trinidad, which I'll give you a funny story about that. And then I wanted to ask you a question about goalkeeper. So when I was in Trinidad last October, I was doing a couple interviews, and I was writing a piece about Jermaine Jones for Gangster Coming, and I was talking to him, and I kind of just offhandedly said, what's the hardest place to play on the road? And he said, Honduras. He said, because once you're in Azteca, it's so loud and cauldrony. He said, you almost kind of just clear your head. And it kind of made sense to me, like just this idea that there's just so much noise that it almost becomes white noise.
Yeah, and I think also at Azteca, I mean, we stereotype maybe Mexican fans based on Mexican-American fans in the U.S. that throw things on the pitch in Atlanta. But Azteca, I think the crowd is a lot less hostile than they are in Honduras, Costa Rica, or Panama, or Guatemala.
Well, one thing Jones said was that the pitch at Azteca was nice.
Yeah, that's yeah, so it's a proper pitch, unlike what you get in most of this region.
Right. He said it's a, you know, he said it's a nice field. So he said Honduras and Trinidad were the toughest. And I said, why is Trinidad? I said, you know, this is a track stadium, essentially. And it's a, you know, it's a relatively nice plot of grass, depending on what time of year. And his comment was, it's just hard to focus there because you're in this beautiful island in the Caribbean.
Makes sense.
And I thought it was kind of classic Jermaine Jones, like just so candid that you're just kind of, you know, taken aback by it. But those are the trips that the U.S. have left. So, and then, you know, and he said that San Pedro Sula is everything that you can think of that is a horror show. I mean, Jermaine said it's a house of horrors. Just, you know, he outlined that he had been hit by a battery.
Sure.
So he said he'd been hit by a battery, a glass of sangria once. So he just said, you have no idea how horrible it is there. And on the bus ride, you know, you've got basically Honduran paramilitary people that are escorting your bus in, and people are just throwing rocks at it. It's crazy. So, yeah, I mean, Timmy Chandler, let's see him in a Gold Cup produce and play, because he's playing too well at the club level. I think you're right to not call him in. Now, I'm not sure he's had the same, and maybe he has had the same influence as Fabian has had. Fabian's best games have been in Europe, though.
In Champions League, yeah. No, Arena had said that he had thought about calling Chandler in, but that he was suspended for the first game, and then given his record on the road, in this, you didn't want him playing in the second game. So I think his thought was he would call Chandler in and play him in the softer game against Honduras, maybe bring him off the bench. Didn't know it would be 6-0, but let's say it's 2-0, bring him on for the last 10 minutes, get his feet wet again with the national team. He was suspended for that game, so the only option was to play him against Panama, which Arena wasn't going to do.
Right. And fair. Fly him across the ocean on Friday or Saturday.
To not play, right, yeah.
To play Tuesday night in temperatures that are 40 degrees warmer than what he's been playing. I mean, that's a big ask. So I think it made sense. It was a defensible thing. And Bruce Arena could not really predict that Michael Orozco was going to...
Yeah, Orozco and Cameron both, right?
Right, so dogs are just a natural part of every podcast.
Right, yeah, yes. Mine has been good thus far, but he's staring at me, so we might hear from him any second. So, what's your sense going forward about the center back pairing? It's going to be John Brookson who...
Yeah, it is. It's the position where, again, I go back to how I'm oddly looking forward to a Gold Cup. I think it's the one spot where the U.S. have the injuries and the results, 4 points in two games, which was the goal, was 4 points in two games. So they accomplished the goal, and they did it despite a host of injuries. And they did it with depth that this program has never had. It was a devastating indictment of the U.S. doesn't have talent argument that the Klinsmann acolytes made. Except at center back, where the U.S. apparently doesn't have great depth. Now, how much of that is the fault of the program for not integrating a player like Matt Hedges faster, that I think is certainly an international quality center back? I know Matthew Doyle thinks that. I know Jason Davis, you know, the pretty cultured MLS analysts that aren't prone to exaggerate the quality of an MLS player. Maybe Matthew does from time to time, but Hedges is an international quality player, hasn't played. So you're stuck with Ream, who had played terribly against Panama in the 2011 Gold Cup, and you don't defend a set piece, and instead of 6 points, you end up with four.
Right.
But... you know, I think you're right. I think if you go, I think it's got to be Cameron Brooks. And then, you know, like you've mentioned, you now are in a position where there's been discussions about integrating Eric Lehigh. Bruce Arena has actually said his name three times, which is three times more than Klinsmann said.
Right. Which is music to my ears, personally. Lehigh, the player, I think, to me, more symbolic than anyone else, was ignored and omitted by Klinsmann, even though...
He's a good footballer.
Yeah, and, you know, we've talked about this over and over again, and I know people are sick of hearing it from me, but has played consistently well for a long time in the second division in England at a big club.
Right.
In a good league. The second division in England is not like the second division anywhere else in the world.
No, it's a good league. It's as good as MLS.
Right, and he's been consistently good in that league. He's not like Tim Ream, who's been... You know, hit or miss at times in that league. Emerson Hyman, who doesn't play all the time, right? You know, Hyman's now in the...
Danny Williams doesn't play all the time.
Doesn't play all the time, right. Lehigh has been... That's why there have been no rumors of Lehigh coming back to Major League Soccer, because he's so well respected in the English game, but
exactly.
Klinsmann didn't like him for some reason, and there was never any explanation as to why, but he just didn't.
No. So I think, you know... The U.S. needs to develop some depth there. I'd love to see Cameron Carter-Vickers at the Gold Cup. I'd love to see Eric Palmer-Brown, who was marvelous in those qualifiers for the youth team. I'd love to see him in the Gold Cup. Now, people say, there are already MLS center backs better than him. Well, there are, but none of them are 19 and have his style of freakish athletic, have his combination.
Yeah, and in the case of Carter-Vickers, he just needs games because he's in this position where he's too good to be loaned out by Spurs, and he's not good enough to crack that team, because who would be when they have Alderweireld and Vertonghen, right? They have two of the best center backs in the world on that.
Yeah, no one will pay his wages, which is why he can't
get on. So they're not able to loan him out. I think he needs games. I give him the Gold Cup. I make sure he's cap tied based on the Gold Cup. I give him all five games or six games, however many games were alive in that tournament.
Absolutely. No, I couldn't agree more. I mean, I might even go Hedges, Carter-Vickers. It actually makes sense for a right center back, left center back, although Bruce has never cared about that as much as Bob Bradley
or for instance. Right. Yeah, and I think also you look at the possibility of Eric Palmer-Brown being integrated. You want to use the Gold Cup to do that. You want to use some friendlies to do that for sure. Obviously, you have a U-20 World Cup where both Carter-Vickers and Eric Palmer-Brown are going to be a big part of that team. That's
pretty important.
Yeah.
Pretty important.
Now, one other name that I guess I should be paying better attention to how this guy is doing in Germany right now, but Caleb Stanko can play that position we're talking about.
He can play the six. He can play. He's a really versatile. He's a guy that is an interesting kind of product of cross training, which is popular in U.S. development, at least. He can play three or four positions. So, obviously, a guy that Jurgen liked a lot.
Yeah.
And we'll see kind of where his future is. I wanted to ask you about goalkeeper. I thought Tim Howard made a world class save last night in the 33rd minute on Quintero.
It was
a world class save. Brad Friedel made some world class saves when he was 38 in the Premier League. So that's how good Tim Howard is that at his age he can make those saves. How concerned are you about that position, though?
Very.
He'll be 39. I mean, I think it's the largest concern moving forward for the United States. I would actually slot it ahead of figuring out what to do with Michael Bradley, because what I know about Michael Bradley is he's going to bring his lunch pail and go to work,
right?
No matter what he's asked to do. So, you know, whether they end up going a different direction in the center of midfield is kind of a fascinating question that we can debate and hash out. The U.S. has a goalkeeper problem.
Yeah.
Am I wrong?
No, you're right. And one hope I have is that Middlesbrough gets relegated. Brad Guzan decides to stay there. Victor Valdez won't play in the championship, right? Too high-quality keeper, pedigree, European champion how many times with Spain and with Barcelona. So my hope is that Barrow gets relegated. Not that I'm wishing for Barrow to get relegated, but if they get relegated, Valdez moves on, Guzan stays, Guzan gets 46 games in the championship next season and is ready for a World Cup based on that. 46 games for a team in Middlesbrough that is expected to push back for promotion and expected to be promoted. Therefore, he has a lot of pressure on him. That is my hope. Now, short of that happening, we have a big problem.
And I think I think the fact that that's the hypothetical that we're hoping for is already indicative of how large the problem is.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah.
I mean, you and I both like David Bingham a lot. Can we just play him at the Gold Cup?
Yeah.
You know, do we need to stop being loyal to Nick Raimondo and just say, look, Nick, we love you. Your service to U.S. soccer has been incredible. We'll give you a send-off match even. We have to play young goalkeepers at the Gold Cup because even if we can play Tim Howard in Russia and he doesn't waste a substitution in the middle of a group stage game, which is like this recurring nightmare I'm having.
We already had it in look.
It's happened.
I think what happened to Klinsmann needed to happen long before it happened. You and I both believe that, but he wasn't helped with his back against the wall by that. And ultimately, it was his decision to start Howard over Guzan. So
it was.
You could blame him for that, but I mean, I don't think I would blame him because we see that Guzan wasn't playing at Middlesbrough. And so he started Howard, and what, 15, 20 minutes in? That's that. And that there's a very strong likelihood that'll happen in a World Cup. Let's be honest about it. So
sure. With the travel and the time
yep.
and the friendlies that lead up with the send-off series, which is good for the team, but it's also a cash cow. And the travel for the send-off series.
And let me tell you something. In 2014, and it didn't happened to us as much as it did to some other countries. And then in the lead up to the 2016 Euros, we saw so many players that got injured in friendlies with serious injuries that made them miss the tournaments for their respective
sure.
countries, that I would think that these national federations need to start thinking about pulling back on those pre-tournament friendlies. I know they're big cash cows, not just here, but in England and in Germany and in Australia and everywhere. But gosh, and England loves to play host when the World Cup is on that side of the world to teams coming through London, which will happen next year. And they play friendlies at Pride Park and at Stadium White and all these stadiums around the country. I think it's something where I would not schedule three or four friendlies anymore right before.
No, and I heard Eric Winalda talking about this last week. And you know, for every Gigi Buffon that can handle it,
oh, he's just a freak of nature.
For every Gigi Buffon, there's a Fabio Cannavaro.
Yeah.
Who can't. There's an Edwin van der Sar who can't. Who's the goalkeeper from England that played fairly well at the World Cup at an elderly age? Was it Seaman that played?
David Seaman, yeah.
Yeah, David Seaman, right. For every David Seaman, there's someone that is not capable of it. So it's just an enormous gamble at a position for the United States, as we saw in Brazil, is extraordinarily important. Now, we don't ever expect one of our keepers to put up a performance like Howard did against Belgium, or for that matter, like Brad Guzan did against Panama in the
right.
Gold Cup.
That might have been an even better performance, believe it or not, for people who didn't see that, because I know not many people.
Probably better. Probably better. But the U.S. has to figure that. They've got to figure that position out. And it's concerning, and, you know, there has to be some sort of bridge-the-gap answer before Jonathan Klinsmann.
Yeah, well, Jonathan Klinsmann is 20 years old, so we're you don't want to start a keeper at that age. You don't want to bet in a keeper even at 23 or 24, so I think Bingham is the guy I like, but there's a lot of people are adherents or fans of Robles. You hear a lot about Bill Hamid when he's fit. Obviously, you always
which is never. Sorry, DC United fans. He's never fit.
William Yarborough is another one that people who watch Liga MX closer than I do tell me is a very good keeper.
He is good.
I've never really seen it at the national team level, but he hasn't had that many chances. Jurgen, to his credit, would call him in.
It's not a keeper's league, though, Karmic.
No.
It's not a keeper's league like MLS is.
Yeah. So I think it's a difficult one for Arena going into this World Cup, where you have to have a guy that's reliably playing at a high level as the backup. And I don't have much faith in having a player who's never played outside of MLS. Now, of course, Robles has played outside of MLS for much of his career.
Right, sure.
But I like Bingham better than Robles. I think he's a better. His distribution is better. I think his shot stopping is about as good. It's about equal, and I like the way he takes command of his box on set pieces. Watching San Jose.
Well, that's the main thing, is the command he has of his box and area, and the fact that, in my view, he's more consistent than the other MLS options.
Yes.
But you don't say, "Oh, what a howler" by David Bingham very much.
No, you don't. Like you do by Gleason and some of these other MLS keepers. But I really do hope Guzan gets games. And look, I threw out a scenario which shows how desperate we are about Middlesbrough. But it is possible they get relegated. There's a good chance they're going to get relegated. And Valdez says, "Hey, you know, I'm a Barcelona goalkeeper. I'm a Manchester United goalkeeper. See ya." And Guzan is the guy left there to play 46 games in the championship. And I kind of hoped that had happened at Villa. That was what hope in the back of my head, is that he would just stay at Villa and play 46 games in the championship and be ready for national team duty. Instead, he chose, probably for wages purposes, to go back to the Premier League and sit. Now, that's a fashionable thing in Europe, by the way, for those who don't follow European club football closely, that there are a lot of high-end keepers who decide to go to big clubs and sit as the number two and never play because their wages are so high, much higher than it would be to play somewhere else. But in this case, Guzan, now having done that at Borough for a year, I think would have to make the decision, do I want to be in this national team or not? Do I want to be the starting option? Bruce Arena probably has to have a talk with him and tell him, just play. Go down with them to the championship, play with them in the championship, and you'll be back in the U.S. team.
Or go to Atlanta and play.
Or go to Atlanta and play there. Right, go to MLS and play, or go down to the championship and play, but don't stay in the Premier League as a number two.
Certainly, the way that Atlanta defends, he'll have plenty of chances to show that he can still stop shots.
Now, of course,
they score goals, though.
Yeah.
We should talk about that on our next pod. MLS heavy on our next pod.
Yes, we're going to be almost all MLS on our next pod. One last point I'll make about the goalkeeper situation with Guzan is Bruce Arena doesn't seem to have the bias against the championship that Jurgen Klinsmann did in not picking Lehigh, not picking Jonathan Spector, and certainly not picking Ream until he was forced to, and really beginning to ignore Danny Williams when he moved from Germany over there. Arena has a different view of the championship. He consistently picked Eddie Lewis when he was in the championship, consistently picked Marcus Hahnemann when he was in the championship, now has picked Ream, has talked up Lehigh. So I think Guzan could make that move down with Borough if they get relegated and be fine. And actually, not just be fine, I think improve his chances of being back in the mix. Otherwise, Howard is your number one, and he's going to be 39 years old, and you don't know about his health. And then you're going to untested, unproven options.
And when you're 39, you're just not what you were.
Right. Yeah.
On top of all of it, you're just not what you are. Even at that position, you're not.
Even Gigi Buffon makes more mistakes than he used to, as great as he is. And you see what's happened to guys like Casillas. Casillas hit 33, 34, and started to make the kind of mistakes that he never would make before, even at that position.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. I mean, it's a testament to Howard's athleticism and his fitness and his commitment.
But Neil, you follow Everton. He started to make mistakes that last year at Everton that he had never made before.
He did. I'm not sure that they've replaced him with anyone particularly better, but Robles is okay.
Yeah, and Stecklenburg's okay. But, yeah, they haven't upgraded. I know they do want to upgrade. They're talking about signing another keeper this summer, but the point being, he hit 30. He would have been 36 at the time, right? That last year at Everton, 36 or 37, and he began to make mistakes that he had never made at Everton or Manchester United before.
He lost the crowd, which is not what you want to do if you're a goalkeeper in that country.
For some reason, Brad Friedel's the only guy that didn't. Friedel played till he was 43, the last few years as a backup, but still didn't make mistakes. And Pochettino would throw him in cup matches.
That's probably, Howard probably says, I take as good a care of myself as Brad Friedel.
But
that's true.
Keep in mind, Friedel wasn't playing for the national team after the age of about 30.
You've just finished the sentence.
About 30.
So,
yeah,
you finished my sentence, which is exactly. No, that's okay.
So he didn't play as much. He didn't have as much tread on his tires, is what I'm saying for his age.
Yep. So that's kind of where we're at, folks. We will do MLS heavy. We'll get into some NASL. I think I'm going to go down to Miami, see them play the Cosmos this weekend. We'll see. We'll get into some of that in the next podcast.
Maybe some USL as well. I've been keeping
we can talk some. We'll talk some USL, US Open Cup, these sorts of things. But thanks for listening, and we'll catch up with you next week.